Welcome to the Lead Defend Podcast, a show designed to help you grow in faith and leadership as you navigate the stages of young adulthood. We address important faith topics and provide practical life tips, helping you build up your faith as you engage a changing culture. Now, here are your hosts.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Lead Defend. My name is Brock, and usually Ryan is here with me, but I've got some good news. Ryan will be back in the future. He's getting ready to bring some of you guys down to Lead Defend Conference. We're getting ready to have the conference tomorrow at the time of this recording, but in the meantime, I have Bill Newton with me. How's it going, Bill?
Man, it's good. And Ryan told you he had students to bring down, but the truth is,
he's probably just sleeping.
He's going to a Taylor Swift concert.
He probably is going to. I mean,
he is a hardcore Swifty. He is a hardcore Swifty.
And all of his students at the U of A can attest to that. But today we are excited because one of our speakers tomorrow at Lead Defend is going to be Brett and Aaron Kunkel. Brett and Aaron, how are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good.
Great to be back in Arkansas.
Yeah, just got in from California, so it's good to be
here. Yeah, we were just talking about California, and a couple years ago, I got to go to Anaheim, which is near where you live, and you said you live so close to Disneyland that you can hear the fireworks?
Yep, every night at 9:35 p.m. we're outside,
some people say it must be
9:35.
Like cuckoo clocks at their house. You have Disneyland fireworks.
So when the kids were little and I would hear the fireworks, I'd say, "Oh no, you guys are supposed to be in bed. It's already 9:30."
So, like a mom.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Perfect, man. So tell us a little bit about yourself. We know you're from California. Tell us who you guys are, maybe how you met, and this organization called Maven. I see it on your shirt. A little bit about what that means.
Yeah, well, Aaron is my first wife.
Ew.
I gotta start using that.
You didn't let me finish. My first and only wife.
Oh, well, that makes it so much better.
You know, I just wanted you to know you're number one in my life. We've been married for 26 years. We have five children.
Yeah.
After three, you start to lose track. Yeah. You're just like, I'm aware of people in the house. Five kids. And actually, let me just announce this. Aaron is a grandma.
Wow.
Aaron has three grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
And so congratulations, honey.
Yeah, our five children aren't really children anymore. Our two oldest kids are married. And then, our oldest daughter has three little girls. So we still have two at home, but we also are grandparents, too. So we
still have a 12 and 16-year-old at home. Mm-hmm. So we've got our own youth group at home. we started Maven 6.5 years ago.
Awesome.
And we're an organization that really seeks to pass on a biblical worldview to the next generation, mm-hmm. and also equip those who are training the next generation to be able to pass on biblical truth. Mm-hmm. And that's what a maven is. I mean, a maven refers to someone who is knowledgeable or an expert in some field, and then they seek to pass that on to others.
Yeah.
So you might have a finance maven. Hmm. You might have a fashion maven. Well, we're all called to be mavens of biblical truth.
Absolutely.
And so that's what we're about. And so we love to speak at events like this and try to challenge young minds to go much deeper than often they go. And to really be able to love God. I mean, as Jesus says in Matthew 22, love God with all your heart, soul, and mind.
Yeah. So you got some young people listening to this podcast. Let's say that they want to go deeper. They want to have that knowledge, those experiences passed on to them. When you look at some of the students that you work with, what are some of the key things that you try to do with your organization to pass on pass that on to the next generation?
Well, I like what you said about knowledge and experience, because oftentimes when we think about the Christian life and think, oh, I want to go deeper with God, we don't often include knowledge. We'll just think, oh, I want these experiences. Hmm. And, or, you know, experiences I've heard other people have or whatever. And I think knowledge has to be connected if we want to grow in our relationship with God. And the 18 to 25-year-olds, which I think is what you said, your kind of main audience. I know when I was in that age, that's when I grew, I think, the most in my life.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I became a Christian right before I turned 18, and the circumstances of that was I grew up in a Christian home. My dad was actually a pastor when I was real little, But then we had kind of a bad experience at a church. My dad ended up leaving ministry and going into marriage and family counseling. But anyway, grew up in a great home, but I myself never was following Christ. I said I was, but so if you would have asked 16-year-old Aaron, oh, are you a Christian? I would have said, oh, of course, yes. Like, I go to church every Sunday with my parents. But I was in no way a follower of Christ.
Yeah.
And so a few months before my high school graduation, I had had a steady boyfriend all through high school, and I found out I was pregnant. And he was ready to take a football scholarship, and
yeah.
I was in California. He was heading to Illinois. I was actually going to head to Texas for college. And so now, all of a sudden, all the plans I had made, everything I thought was going to happen, got flipped upside down. And so I ended up, through a friend, getting connected with a teen mom ministry at a little church in Anaheim, actually.
Yeah.
And so even though I'd been going to church, I went to this church, and now I had ears to hear the gospel.
Yeah,
and absolutely. And I became a follower of Christ. Well, then, now I'm going to be a mom. I became a mom, and now, but I'm wanting to grow in my faith. And so I knew about Biola University, a Christian college in Southern California. And I thought maybe that would be good for me to grow, because I realized I grew up in the church, but I actually knew nothing about the Bible.
Yeah.
Right. Like when I started at Biola, if you would have asked me, you know, who's Paul? I would have said, I think he's one of the disciples, which
yeah.
if you think that, listener, that's actually the wrong answer. But that was the wrong answer. I had no clue. I'm like, I know I've heard of a guy named Paul. But the 4 years that I ended up transferring in, but the 4 years there, I grew so much in my relationship with God, because I was growing exponentially in my knowledge of God and in my knowledge of the scriptures. And of course, that was coupled with experience, right? Now I'm a single mom, and then I meet this guy, and he wants me to help in his junior high ministry. This guy sitting next to me. So
is that when you asked me into your heart as
no.
well?
No, but so now I'm serving in ministry. I have a lot of struggle in my own life,
yeah.
But I'm growing in my knowledge of God, and that those 4 years. So 4 or 5 years in my life were just, it laid the foundation for now, you know, many years of ministry. Well, 26 years that we've been married. But particularly with young people, I have a heart for young people, as does Brett.
Yeah.
Because my big change happened in those years.
Yeah.
And the culture often tells us, like, oh, those years, just live it up. They don't really matter that much. And I'm like, no, they matter so much. I'm 47 now, and still I think those years were by far some of the most pivotal.
Well, I what Aaron's saying, I think, is really important, not just because she's my wife.
good answer.
You're biased.
But I think I think this is pervasive in the church. I think we make a false dichotomy between things like knowledge.
Yep.
And, you know, the scriptures and relationship or experience.
Yeah.
Right.
When, and so we take those things and we separate them as if, and the way we talk about it is like, well, hey, knowledge is good and it's important, but really what's the most important thing is your experience of God. You know, how much you love the Lord, you're walking in relationship with Him. And that's the false dichotomy, as if somehow this relational aspect is disconnected from the knowledge piece.
Right.
And, you know, we illustrate this all the time with our own relationship.
Yeah.
Like, if you came to me and were asking me questions about Aaron,
right?
And you said, hey, tell us about it, your wife, Aaron. You've been married 26 years, right? You must have a lot to tell us. And I said, oh, yeah, Aaron, she's got sandy blonde hair, or brownish hair. She's got, she's 5'6". Oh yeah, Aaron. She's got two eyeballs. You know, yeah, that's Aaron.
Yeah.
You'd laugh, and you'd say, no, really, tell us about Aaron. And if I said, that's about all I know.
Mm-hmm.
would you not draw some conclusions about the nature of our relationship?
Yeah,
based upon what you think I know, of course, because knowledge and relationship are intertwined.
Yeah.
Right? Now, we wouldn't say just knowing facts about Aaron is all of the relationship, but it's nothing less than that.
Yeah.
And that fits very closely. I mean, the more I am in deeper relationship with her, the more you would guess that my knowledge of her grows. And knowledge, not only kind of what we call propositional knowledge, not just knowing these facts, like Aaron's 5'6" and she's this and that, but experiential knowledge. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a way to tie them back together. Yeah. There's experiential knowledge where, like, Aaron could walk into a room, and because we've been in this close relationship where we have this acquaintance with each other, she can walk into a room, and you might not have the same kind of experiential knowledge I have. So you might look at her and go, oh, she looks like she's in a good mood. And I can look at her and go, oh, crap, we're in trouble. You know, she's ticked off about something.
Yeah.
Because I have this experiential knowledge. Yeah. And that all ties together. And so I think what we need to do is we need to pull knowledge and experience and relationship back together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biblical picture.
Right.
You think about what Paul says in Romans 12 too. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
Right.
And so that's what we're passionate about at Maven, is to really help tie those things in, because I think we shoot ourselves in the foot. We short circuit our own spiritual transformation by pulling these things apart.
Yeah, that's helpful. I've heard it said, I can't remember who it's attributed to, but basically the idea is we can only worship God for what we know about him. So what we don't know about God, that knowledge that we don't have, we can only worship him to the degree that we know him. And so the more that we know him, the more that we can experience and worship him. And again, those two ideas of experience and knowledge coming together. When you guys at Maven try to put this into practice, what are some things you do to give students both experiences but also opportunities to learn and gain knowledge?
Yeah, I think maybe the most powerful thing that we're involved with are what we call immersive experiences. And that is where we try to take all of the teaching and training and biblical truth and get it out of the classroom setting and put it into a real life situation.
Yeah.
Right? The classroom training, like sitting in church, listening to a message, being in Sunday school, being at Lead Defend, all important stuff.
Yeah.
But I think a next step, especially for our high school and college age students, get it out of the classroom. Yeah. And
which is what you see Jesus doing with his disciples.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is one of the primary ways, right? He's teaching. And we've lost that.
Yeah.
And so we need to force ourselves and our young people into situations where we have to now articulate it. Because obviously articulating it is key to our primary mission as the church, as the New Testament church. Go and make disciples. That means you got to articulate the gospel, the good news, Christian truth, deal with the challenges and objections. So we do that through these immersive experiences, and we have three in particular. One is focused on scripture and theology, and that's where we take groups to Utah.
Yeah.
And, of course, lots of Mormons in Utah, and we put the students, after we've done training with them beforehand, we put them in situations where you have to engage and have conversations with Mormons. Mormons who may know the Bible better than you.
That's right.
And so it's challenging. It forces you to really learn what you believe. And then we have an apologetics one where we go to a university town. We find a university where there's all kinds of skepticism, challenges to the Christian faith, atheists. We have students engage with skeptics. And we bring out atheists, and they dialogue. And we teach not only how to defend the faith, to know why now you believe what you believe, but then also this Christian truth that we hold to and that we're defending and we're engaging, what are the implications for real life? Okay, so now I'm talking to an atheist, or I'm talking to a Mormon who's an unbeliever. Does that impact the way I treat them? Do I somehow treat them with less dignity and respect because they don't believe what I believe? No, of course not, because Christian truth says this is an image bearer. They have just as much value and dignity no matter what they believe, because they are created in the image of God and they have intrinsic or inherent value. And so then that informs how we engage in this. And sometimes the best way to learn is to get knocked around a little bit, you know? Yeah, right?
That's
right. This is, we actually, I think, if you want to grow in general, If you want to grow, put yourself in increasingly difficult situations.
Yeah.
We overvalue comfort in this culture, and that's why a lot of us don't grow, and that's why a lot of times we're apathetic about the faith.
Yeah.
These trips put college groups, we do high school groups, Christian schools, youth groups, college groups. It puts you in challenging situations, and it's a little nerve-wracking at first, but what we see trip after trip after trip is that students grow exponentially on these trips, and it lights them with a kind of a new passion, because for many of these students, it's the first time they've actually shared the truth, shared the gospel.
There's a boxer that says, everybody has a strategy until you get punched in the face.
Yeah.
Right? And I think evangelism, apologetics, it's like sometimes it's like, all right, I've got my, you know, three-step plan or my evangelism tool or my apologetics points. And in the classroom, it looks really neat and tidy. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you go out and until, you know, hopefully not physically, but maybe, you know, in conversation, you kind of get knocked off your feet. But that kind of makes you aware of where maybe some of your weak spots are or where you have more questions.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a listener may be thinking, well, like, should we really be putting students in this situation? Won't this just cause them to doubt their faith? Mm-hmm. Won't this just cause more deconstruction? How would you answer that?
Yeah.
I mean, I think one answer is no. I think, could it do that? Well, sure, it could. But, I mean, we aren't thinking that these students won't ever face these challenges, right? So the question is, when do we want them to engage with challenges? Do we want them to engage in challenges for the first time when they're on a college campus or in their first job, and their boss who's like
by themselves,
and maybe they have a boss who's an atheist, great guy, super persuasive, you know, and they're like, well, wait, this isn't the caricature of an atheist that I thought these guys were mean, this guy's great, you know, and like, is this when we want them to wrestle with it? I don't think so. I think actually we want to expose them to people who believe all different things, you know, really by the time they're fifth, sixth, seventh grade. Mm-hmm. And one way we do that is just by, frankly, reading the scriptures to them. Because the whole Old Testament, the state of Israel is surrounded by people who believe all different, who worship all kinds of false gods. So unless we're going to shield that from our kids, or then go to the New Testament, and Paul goes to all these places where they're worshiping all these different gods, right? And so just by reading them the scriptures, we're exposing them to, oh, look, people believe all different things about God. And so how do we address that?
Yeah, I think it's the difference between being kind of on the defense and being on the offense. Mm-hmm. I think a better strategy than waiting and then just reacting is being preemptive.
Yeah,
so I would much rather have my high school student starting to struggle with doubt and ask those questions when they're with me than when they're 1,000 miles away on their college campus by themselves, not plugged into a local church. And so, look, if they're questioning, if the exposure is going to lead them to questions, well, those questions are going to come up at some point, right? And they are, and I guess we have to stop. We have to be careful of overprotecting kids.
Coddling.
Right. And yeah, there's the coddling.
Yeah.
I think when kids are younger, there's appropriate protection. Mm-hmm. But by when we're talking about high school students and middle school students, that's when we need to be preparing them to be on the offense.
Yeah.
And what we model for them, and we've seen this, there's a confidence that we model. Look, if Christianity is true, we've got nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah.
We can engage intellectually. We have good answers. Every argument against Christianity is going to be flawed by its very nature. Mm-hmm. And so if it's false, well, we don't want to believe it, right? If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, Paul tells us this in 1 Corinthians 15, then this is a waste of time, you know? So when we engage with false ideas, we show that we're confident.
Mm-hmm.
There's a confidence there that young people, I think, that really... they don't see enough of that, and so then we can inoculate them from these false ideas. So they start, encountering and engaging with these false ideas, and maybe they're wrestling with it, but we're there to walk them along, help them to see the bad arguments, help them to see the true, learn really good apologetics, really know what they believe, why they believe it, and then we're able to then kind of send them out confidently with the tools. Yeah. And so, well,
yeah, and I love your approach in that. And I would say for those who are hesitant about experiencing that, the truth is they're exposed to that stuff all the time anyway, yep, just right. in a much more passive way mm-hmm. where they absorb it without knowing it. I think there's some value in being able to confront them actively,
that's right.
proactively with that.
They're Googling it, YouTubing it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they, yeah. For those, I think, parents who might be, or even ministers who would be nervous about that. Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that because they are still being confronted with that. And if I remember right, first time I heard you guys talk about this, I think you said you guys go out, but then you decompress with them mm-hmm. after the fact, right? Yeah. So it's a very discipleship-based model. It's not like you just train them and then send them out and they're on their own, right? You take them for the experiences and then you help them learn from them.
they just get mowed down, but the others,
The debrief, we call it, is a big part of what we do with students because it, first of all, just gives them the space to, okay, this conversation just happened. Let's process it.
Yeah. That's
so good. And then it helps them. Okay. So you're stuck on this. You don't know the answer to that. Okay. So can I help you find the answer? Do I know the answer and I can help show you where it is in the scriptures? Mm. Is this something we need to search together? And so just having the space for that, I think again, shows students, we're not afraid to have the conversations
That's right.
and then to talk about them after. We're not going to just like, oh yeah, that was, that guy had a good answer for that and, and just kind of brush it under the rug. No, we'll talk about it and we'll help them to find the answers to the questions that came up that maybe they never thought about or that came up and they were like, I don't have a good thing to say about it. And actually, I just did this yesterday with some junior high and high school students. I'm teaching a apologetics class at a little co-op in Southern California. It's homeschool kids and we all get together one day a week. And so I'm teaching the apologetics class and we're going through world religions. So we did Mormonism and I invited two Mormon sisters to come in and share about Mormonism and the students got to talk to them. And yesterday we had a Jehovah's Witness come. We've been studying that. So I've been training the students in what they believe. And now we invited a person from that faith in. And I have little squirrely junior hires who are awesome. And they had prepared, I told them, I want like homework 1 week was like come up with questions and then come up with scriptures that maybe you could point to when they give the answer. And some of the seventh graders, like when the guy left and we debriefed, one of them was like, ugh, he didn't answer it the way he was supposed to answer. And I go, okay, let's talk about how is he supposed to answer. Well, the church teaches this, but he said this. And I said, okay, that's interesting. How could you navigate that when that comes up? But the kids, I mean, they leave that class. First of all, I'm like, you guys, we have to go. But they just wanted to talk and talk because they're excited. Like, okay, this stuff really matters. And like when the Mormon sisters came, and this is what happens on the trips with the students. The students don't learn how to like argue and beat people over the head. It's the exact opposite. They are sitting with other human beings, looking them in the eye. And then like when the Mormon sisters left, my students were just, I said to them, if Christianity is true and Mormonism is false, they believe in a false God. And we know what's going to happen to them if Christianity is true, which I think we have good reason. And the room's just quiet. And I said, have you met sweeter girls than those sisters? You know, and I said, this stuff matters because truth matters. And this is why if we have the truth, it matters that we speak it, that we seek after people who are lost. And this is what we see over and over again with the students that come on the trip. They grow in their knowledge and their hearts are softened for the lost. We have students broken for lost people all the time.
Yeah, I think it's a missing piece in discipleship.
I would agree.
If you're in high school and college and most of your discipleship is happening behind the four walls of the church, your growth is going to be stunted. By this time, we need to be going out. And that's what you see in the New Testament.
That's right.
The disciples are going out. They're out in the culture. The Great Commission is to go and make disciples.
So let's talk about that for a second, because I can see a leader that's just like, all right, with everything else I've got going on, how do I make time for this? And obviously it's a priority, but where do I even start? And maybe they're blessed like me that they live 30 minutes away from a major university. Maybe they're listening in Arkansas. Maybe there's a community college within an hour, but maybe, you know, something like that isn't close to them. You know, how could this type of a thing be played out? What instructions would you give to maybe develop something like this in a local church setting? Even if I think what you just talked about, bringing in people from outside, like that's worth listening to the podcast just right there. That's a great idea. But what are some ways that people could implement this in the local church? And maybe what are some ways on the front end that you're preparing these students to go out? How are you coaching them to get into conversations? Just some practical things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, 50,000 thoughts come to my mind. So I'm going to just throw out a bunch of things here. Number one, when I think about the time I spent doing junior high, high school, and college ministry as a pastor in a local church, I would love to go back and redo things. And what I would do is I would stop teaching on Christian living, and I would focus on theology and apologetics.
Okay.
Scripture, theology, doctrine, and apologetics, because again, I think what I've come to see is how much of an engine knowledge is to our spiritual growth and transformation. Yes. And if anyone does a study on the idea of heart in the Old and New Testament, they're going to see it's not just, oh, the emotions or experiential. It's the whole person. Yep. It's this very inclusive term that includes mind, will, everything. And so I would go back and I'd start throwing out, you know, some of the fun trips. Now, I'm not against fun, like, but what I've come to see is that the most fun, and fun's not even the proper word, the deepest, most joyful experiences I've had in the aren't taking kids to Disneyland.
Yeah.
It's when we live on mission together, living out the cause of Christ.
Yeah.
And so on these trips, trips are challenging.
Yeah.
That challenge you grow, and for a lot of times, for a lot of young people, it's the first time they've actually lived out. They've lived life kind of 5, 6, 7 days in a row on mission for Jesus, and there's this, it just lights them up with passion.
Yeah.
So, so I would kind of redo those things, and I would figure out ways just to get out of the classroom more. So, or bring that stuff into the classroom. Mm-hmm. So we did, inviting people who don't believe in and having them engage. When we were doing junior high ministry, we did this with junior hires. We would do a world religion series, and then we would just look up, do a search for the Buddhist temple. And so we do 2 or 3 weeks on Buddhism, and then we're going to do a field trip to the Buddhist temple. And those people are very excited when you call them and say, hey, I got 60 Christian kids that we want you to teach them about Buddhism and answer their questions. Can you do that? They're like, yes, please bring them down. You know, the Hindu temple, the mosque. And so all the different ways you can kind of either bring it in or get out, I think are key. And you don't have to be an expert. You learn with the kids. Mm-hmm. I'd say read, if you want a good maybe book to read to start equipping you.
Yeah.
I'd say Greg Kokel's book, Tactics.
Okay.
Like every leader should read that. It'll equip you specifically with how to ask good questions, because you don't have to, when you're engaging with anybody, you don't have to have all the answers. You don't need to know all of the arguments. If you know how to ask the right questions and you know how to think somewhat decently, you can engage with anybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want to teach our kids too, is not just what to think, but how to think, and therefore how to navigate these conversations on their own.
Yeah.
And so those are some ideas. I'd say, look, if you're like, I need help on this, partner with Maven.
Yeah.
We lead trips from groups around the U.S., on these kind of trips. Mm-hmm. And here's what we find. Probably, since we've been doing it through Maven, probably about 85% of the groups that go on one trip will then book the next trip because they get a taste of it.
Yeah.
And the students get a taste of it. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is life-changing. And we want to come back, and we want to do not just the Utah trip. Now we want to go do the apologetics trip, and then we have a third one, a worldview trip. And it's one of those things where until you experience it, it's hard to even for us to communicate how powerful these are.
Yeah. And actually this summer, for the first time at Maven, we're offering, so anyone listening who's a high school or college student, we're doing an open enrollment trip. So typically we take a Christian school or, you know, the youth pastor contacts us. We come up with a trip for them and take them. This summer, for the first time, anyone can sign up and come. So from all over the country, we have students coming in to Utah. We have a house there in Utah. They're going to stay, the Maven House. And so this summer is the first time we've been able to staff that and do it. So if someone listening is like, I need this training. Mm-hmm. I want to do this. They can sign themselves up and do it. But yeah, I mean, really, it's so easy to get in these conversations once you start just being aware. And one thing I told my students yesterday, now they're junior high school, so I'm like, you have to ask your mom and dad. But if they're open to it, I'm like, you guys love this conversation. It was only an hour. I'm like, go to jw.org.
Yeah.
And they will happily come over because, as Brett said, if you approach the Mormons, the Buddhists, and say, will you teach my students about what you believe and let them ask questions, they're like, yes. You know, like, is this a joke?
Yeah.
And I said to them, you know, the Jehovah's Witness guy, when he left, was just very praising of my students and said how their questions were so good. And I mean, these are like 12-year-old to 18-year-olds that were in the class. But, and he said, you know, he's never really, you know, had an opportunity to do that. And I told them when he left, I said, do you know why that is? Because most Christians, when the JWs come knocking on the door, they say no thanks and slam the door.
That's right. Yeah.
These are people who are coming to your door saying, can I talk to you about the Bible? Can I talk to you about God? And we're saying, so sometimes it's just like, maybe we'll just change our posture.
Yeah.
And the next time the Mormons do come, we'll say, oh yeah, come in. I have some questions.
Yeah.
And so even just living intentionally, I think that can be a posture of,
that's good.
And asking questions is really the key. I, you know, as I said, I became a Christian through my experience of becoming a mom. And then as we had more kids, I felt like, oh, I have so much to learn. But once I stopped being nervous about that and thought, I'm just going to learn with my kids.
Yeah.
I have learned so much just right alongside with my kids, right alongside with my students.
Yeah.
And that's an okay place to be humble and be like, oh, you guys, you know, I don't know either. Let's read this book together. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't love that? I love that. Yeah. So
I have not seen anything in terms of programs that's been more powerful than these trips. And, I think the evidence that we really believe in these things is that we've made all of our kids go on them multiple times.
You mean all of our five children?
What about children. Do you have the grandkids signed up yet?
Not yet. They're not old enough.
Oh, okay.
But they will be going on these trips.
They will. Yeah, our kids have gone so many times.
Yeah, Ella, I mean, she's probably the last 5 years in a row. She's been going. She's 16 now.
Oh, yeah.
Mike has probably been on 15 different trips.
Yeah, our son, who's 22 now and married, he's now helping Maven lead trips because he's been so many times. And he's had so many conversations with Mormons. Yeah. I mean, hundreds of conversations.
So we've been
taking
them.
Our kids think this is normal.
Yeah, well, we've been taking them since they're elementary age. Or actually since they were babies.
Yeah, babies in a backpack.
We want them to see this as more normal. In fact, at the end of these trips, when we're doing some reflecting with the groups, we will say to them, hey, okay, you've had this experience, this week-long experience in Utah or in Flagstaff here at the university or in Engaging. And I said, okay, when you read the book of Acts and you look at the book of Acts and you see what the church is doing, what looks more like the book of Acts? What you've done here this past week or your experience at the local church?
Yeah.
And they almost always say, what we're doing here.
Wow.
And so what we tell them is not to beat up on the local church, is to say, hey, take this back to your local church.
Yes.
Maybe the local church should look more like this.
That's right.
Because this looks more like the book of Acts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And and so we've seen our kids grow exponentially from these kind of trips.
That's so good. Well, I appreciate what you said a minute ago on the parent permission, because if there's a student pastor here listening who has already signed their students up to go to the local Buddhist temple, make sure you communicate to parents what you're doing. You bring in those Mormon missionaries to talk to your students, and the parents don't understand. Mm-hmm. You're going to be calling Bill here at the convention with your resume looking for a new job. It is a great thing, but cast that vision. Even what you were talking about, those fun trips, maybe it's not – I could see a pastor's like, I would love to cancel – our Disneyland or our ski trip, but I know I'd get fired if I tried to do that. Just repurpose it. Yeah. Listen, you go to Disneyland, you just entered an international mission field. Yep. You go to ski in Colorado or wherever it's at, mm-hmm. there's going to be so many university students there. And so maybe it's not canceling, it's just repurposing. Man, what a sell for what you guys are doing at Maven and the great work of passing on that knowledge and experience to the next generation. Where can people hear more from you? How can they connect with you guys?
Yeah, I'd say start with our website, which is maventruth.com.
Okay.
And on the website, they'll find information about our three main strategies, which is our virtual training. We have different courses online. We have a parent podcast to equip parents. And then we do live events, which are our Maven conferences. Yeah. We also obviously speak at different events. And then the immersive experiences, they'll find information at maventruth.com.
Awesome. Any ways to follow you guys on social media? Do you guys have a bustling Instagram following or
Aaron loves TikTok? To be on Instagram. Oh, are you starting your TikTok account now too?
We are on Twitter and Instagram, all the things.
Okay.
My children tell me that I'm not on it enough. That I need to get better
and
at
you're,
that.
And you say to them, you're on it too much. So it's
just I know. So it's this argument back and forth.
We do have Maven social media. If you just look up Maven social media, you can follow us there and find out about some of the stuff we're doing.
Awesome. Well, Brett and Aaron, thank you so much. We are actually going to have the Lead Defend conference tomorrow at the time of this recording, but there's always things going on with Lead Defend, so check us out at leaddefend.org, and we look forward to you listening next time.
That's it for this episode of Lead Defend. To hear more episodes from the Lead Defend crew, visit absc.org/podcasts. If you liked what you heard, rate and review us on your favorite podcast listening site. Want to learn more information about the next Lead Defend conference? Visit leaddefend.org.